So for me, it all started in high school when I was 15 or 16 years old, and I was in middle of teenage angst. I was having all these new emotions and feelings. I was feeling insecure and just, you know, feeling out of my body. All these new uncomfortable feelings. They were very new and unexpected. So I couldn't understand what was going on. I thought I was being taken over by an alien or something. And I realized that this was something new and totally, totally different. At the same time, though, however, I was taking high school biology and chemistry. And I was really fascinated by the sort of the complexity and biology of life, RNA, DNA, and proteins, and really the beauty of biochemistry. And I was thinking one day, it finally hit me, my eureka moment was that these new emotions were not me, they were actually chemistry. And these new feelings and emotions were actually biochemical processes that were occurring in my brain. So this sort of sparked my interest in sort of the biochemistry of the brain and how it impacts behavior, especially my own. And this really sparked my career. And so at the high school I was at, I was had the opportunity to have a senior research project. And so I decided to study the brain and really study how memories are encoded in our brains. And so, I was sort of interested in science. In elementary school, I had studied the color preference of mealworms, a very important project. And they like blue, actually. But I really wanted this to be serious science. I really wanted to make a contribution to science. And so I decided I wanted to study how what happens in your brain when you learn something, what chemically changes in your brain. And I had read an article in Scientific American about memory studies using goldfish. And so I read this story, and I said, well, maybe I can try to reproduce these experiments and progress and extend the frontiers of science. So I ordered the goldfish and set up a little lab in my high school. And every day after school, I would spend an hour or two sort of training the goldfish how to learn to remember. And in this experiment, in Scientific American, what they were trying to understand is what happens, whether protein synthesis in the brain was important for encoding memories in the goldfish. And the memory task was you would actually train the goldfish. You would put a light one side of an aquarium and train the goldfish to swim away from the light. Of course, the trick was that you would give it a little shock if it didn't swim away from the light. And so so I would turn the lights down and shine a light on one side of the aquarium. And actually, remarkably, these fish were incredibly smart. They would, within a day or so, they would learn to swim away from the light and escape and not get shocked. So so I got this working, and actually, here's my lab notebook. So this is my actual lab notebook from high school. And so I got it working, but now I had to figure out how to test whether protein synthesis was important for this encoding memory. So how was I going to find the drug, the compound that inhibits protein synthesis that they used in this article? I certainly wasn't at the local pet store. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to write Bernie Agrodoff, the author of this paper, and ask him for help in getting this chemical. So I wrote Bernie, who I actually now know, and I said, can you help me? And disappointingly and surprisingly, he wrote back and said, "This experiment is too sophisticated for a high school student, and you shouldn't be doing it." So I was devastated, but I was saved by my biology teacher, and who went and ordered this chemical that's called puremycin from a local chemical company. And so I got puremycin into the lab, and I try to dissolve it up in a salt solution so I can inject the goldfish and see if it would inhibit memory. And it wouldn't dissolve, you know. So it was all clogged up, and the syringe got clogged and wasn't working. But I was a well-trained chemist by this point, 17 years old. So I decided maybe this would be soluble in ethanol. So I dissolved the pure mycin in ethanol, and actually I was brilliant. It worked, and so I was able to proceed with the experiment. So I trained goldfish, and right before I trained them, I would inject a very small amount, a very thin needle of this protein synthesis inhibitor in their brain just before training to see if it would inhibit the learning process. And I was so sophisticated that I did the control experiment. The control experiment is you inject pure ethanol into their brain and see if this also inhibited learning. And remarkably, it didn't. They actually learned, and I want to quote here, it says, 7 out of 10, it is very reasonable to assume that ethanol doesn't affect memory. This was before I started drinking at age 17. I'm sorry to say that I finally did the experiments. I couldn't reproduce Bernie Agronoff's experiments, which I never told him. And so protein synthesis inhibitors never inhibited the learning process in these goldfish. And I'm sorry to say many of them gave their lives to science. But I did go on to graduate high school. My teenage anxiety sort of dissipated. But in the meantime, I found my career. I found my passion. And I knew I wanted to be a brain scientist. And so a lot has happened since then. Now I work at Johns Hopkins. I work with a team of 25 to 30 students and postdoctoral fellows. Actually, some of them, I think, are here somewhere. And we work as a team to really understand what happens in your brain when you learn something, what chemically happens and how our memory is encoded in your brain. And so I wanted to tell a second story, a real quick story, that's actually incredibly related to the initial story. And this is, we have characterized a lot of different types of memory and what happens in your brain. But recently we've been interested in fear conditioning. And we're interested in this because of the possibility for therapeutics for people with post-traumatic stress disorder, and to try to understand how fear memories after a traumatic event are encoded, and also possibly how you would erase this fear association. So we made a significant discovery a couple years ago, and we found that after a fear training, after exposure to a traumatic event, and now we're mostly working with mice and rats, actually, but we do work with humans a little bit too, and that fear memories are very intense. They can be very strong. They last for years, obviously. But we found that about 24 hours after the initial traumatic event, all of a sudden the memories become unstable. And you can actually, we've discovered a way to actually erase the fear association. And this window of time was only for about 48 hours. So you had, if in theory, you would have to treat a patient or a trauma victim within 24 hours or 48 hours after the initial event. And so this proposed a mechanism how we could treat trauma victims. Now, this was not very practical for people. A lot of people who have traumatic experiences, they don't realize they're having trouble with that memory, for a year later. For example, veterans who come back from Iraq and don't realize they're having trouble until they're a year or so later. So very recently we found that actually we could reopen this window of therapeutic instability of the fear memory by re-exposing, in this case, animals to the initial sort of a memory of the traumatic event. And so the concept is you would actually take Iraq veterans and actually put them in a virtual reality machine, and actually this is being done these days, and you can actually reenact the roadside bomb or whatever it is in the safety of a therapist's office. And then 24 hours, what we would predict is that this therapeutic window is going to open again, and we can possibly treat and erase this fear memory. Now, I want to emphasize this is erasing the fear associated with the memory. It doesn't erase the memory itself. So it's a potential therapeutic for PTSD treatment. Now, this sounds a little bit science fiction-y. I want to emphasize we also, of course, we studied how to stabilize memories, not just destabilize them. So we are interested in cognitive enhancers. And, for example, for treatment of Alzheimer's disease and memory-related disorders as well. But also a theory as a cognitive enhancers for relatively normal people like you and me, this could be a therapy of the future. Now, this all sounds pretty science fiction. You know, it's Jim Carrey in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, or it's the Bradley Cooper in, in Limitless. But actually, this coming decades, this may be become a reality. So we continue to work on this. This is sort of my story is not over. I've been working on this for 40 years. This has been my never-ending tale. And it all started with a red goldfish. Thank you.